Radio Prague News.
The ANO party has decided not for the moment to rescind the government coalition agreement due to a row over proposed police reform. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka has gone to China for a working visit, and one of the world's leading banks, China's ICBC, will open a subsidiary in the Czech Republic. The ANO party has decided not for the moment to rescind the government coalition agreement due to a row over proposed police reform. Party leaders met Wednesday evening after Social Democrat Minister of the Interior Milan Chovanec signed the proposed reforms, which include the merger of key anti-corruption and anti-mafia police units. ANO said, however, it would seek revisions of the existing coalition agreement. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said before flying out to China that his party is willing to discuss changes. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka flew out to China for a working visit on Wednesday evening. The main themes of the visit will be to strengthen cooperation over health, civil aviation and the financial sector. Sobotka returns on June the 20th. Sobotka's first day in China will include a visit to a football club. The Czech Republic and China have signed agreements to boost sports, particularly in football and winter sports such as ice hockey. Sobotka is accompanied by the ministers of health, industry and trade, transport and social affairs. One of the world's leading banks, China's ICBC, will open a subsidiary in the Czech Republic. The Czech Secretary of State for European Affairs, Tomáš Prouza, signed a memorandum confirming the bank's entry onto the Czech market on Thursday during Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka's visit to China. The bank has also launched a Czech section of its online platform, eMall. ICBC is China's second biggest bank after Bank of China. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said after the signing of the memorandum that the Czech Republic fulfills its target to become the financial center for Chinese institutions for Central and Eastern Europe. Prague City Hall will award 6 honorary citizenships this year, the City Council decided on Thursday. The recipients include sculptor Olbram Zobek, writer Ivan Klíma, Jiří Suchý, radio and television announcer and Charter 77 signatory Kamila Moučková, founder of the Prague International Marathon Carlo Capalbo, and Emil Zátopek's wife and Olympic medal winner Dana. The official ceremony will take place at the Old Town Hall on the 27th of June. Honorary citizenship of Prague has been awarded since 1920. 2 people, the communist-era presidents Clement Gottwald and Gustav Husák, have been removed from the list in the past. Italian writer, translator, German studies scholar and essayist Claudio Magris will receive this year's Franz Kafka Prize. Mr. Magris, who has become the 16th recipient of the International Literary Award, which is given to authors whose work appeals to readers across different cultures. Among the previous winners were Austria's Elfriede Jelinek and British playwright Harold Pinter, both of whom went on to win the Nobel Prize in Literature the same year. Claudio Magris, who was born in Trieste in 1939, has received a number of Italian and European literary awards, and many of his books have also appeared in Czech. He will collect the prize at the award-giving ceremony in October. Psychiatry care in the Czech Republic is set to undergo reform as a result of a memorandum signed by Health Minister Svatopluk Němeček, insurance company representatives and mental health organizations on Thursday. Psychiatry in the Czech Republic has long been underfinanced and undervalued. According to the director of Prague's psychiatric institution Bohnice, Martin Holý, it only receives around 3-4% of the health ministry's overall budget, or around 10 billion crowns. However, the amount is set to increase in the coming years. There are currently some 500,000 people with psychiatric illness living in the Czech Republic, and about 1/3 of them have undergone treatment at some point of their lives. Meteorologists have warned of heavy storms due to hit most parts of the Czech Republic on Thursday afternoon. The storms may be accompanied by hail and torrential rain, which could swell smaller rivers and flood roads and cellars. As of Friday morning, strong winds that can reach up to 110 kilometers an hour are expected mainly in the northeast parts of the country. I'm Ruth Franková and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, a dispute that has shaken the Czech government came to a head as Interior Minister Milan Chovanec signed a highly controversial plan to reform the police force. We look at a brave new venture on the Czech cultural scene, and later on in the program, we visit an exhibition documenting life in the communist era. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A dispute that has shaken the Czech government came to a head on Wednesday as Interior Minister Milan Chovanec signed a highly controversial plan to reform the police force. For several hours, the fate of the Sobotka government hung in the balance before ANO leader Andrej Babiš announced that his party would not follow up on its threat to leave the ruling coalition. Daniela Lazarová has more.
A plan to merge the country's organized crime and financial crime units resulted in the worst crisis in the two-year rule of the Sobotka government. Faced with the threat of the second strongest party walking out over the planned reform, the Social Democrats put the fate of the government on the line, arguing that the planned change was fully within its competences. Interior Minister Milan Chovanec even fired a verbal shot at ANO leader Andrej Babiš, who accused him of undermining the independence of the police force.
Pro nás nezávislost policie je hodnota.
The independence of the police is a value worth defending. The police force will never become a division of Andrej Babiš's empire, Agrofert.
Nestane nikdy divizí Agrofert.
ANO leader Andrej Babiš, who threatened to quit the government if the Social Democrats enforced the reform, called an emergency meeting of the party leadership and emerged to tell reporters that his party would remain in the government.
We have decided not to withdraw from the coalition agreement at present, but we want it revised in order to make a restart. Many of our members call for us to walk out, but the majority of us think it is important that we will fulfill our mandate.
Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka, who had departed several hours earlier on an official visit to China, tweeted that he welcomed what he called ANO's rational approach and said he was not against revising the coalition agreement. What such a revision would involve remains unclear, and many see it as a face-saving move on the part of ANO. The outcome of the most dramatic standoff in the history of the Sobotka government is generally seen as a victory for the Social Democrats, who are not afraid to call ANO's bluff ahead of the autumn Senate and regional elections. However, the party has not come out of it with a clean slate either, because even those who agree that the reform of the police force is an expert decision fully within the competence of the police president and interior minister are asking why it was so poorly communicated and was not properly consulted with the state attorney's office. Whatever damage it does to relations within the ruling coalition, that it has already caused to the police force is much bigger. Dozens of experienced officers and investigators are leaving the force, one of them the highly respected head of the country's unit for fighting organized crime, Robert Šlachta. And many argue that the month-long postponement of the reform agreed this week, as well as the promise to belatedly take into account the reservations of state attorneys, is too little too late.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. If you are in Prague on Thursday night and see a lot of serious discussions and gesticulations, it might not just be about Czech football chances in Euro 2016. There is a French connection, though, and the Czech capital is in fact hosting its first ever philosophy night, with events and discussions planned until the very early hours. Chris Johnston has more.
Unintelligible answers to insoluble problems. That's how one wit described philosophy. It should be added, though, that it wasn't an American, and such words could not come out of the mouth of a French person. France's contribution to mulling the unintelligible, intangible, and insoluble is probably undisputed, and it's due to that Gallic inspiration that Prague's first ever Night of Philosophy is being held on Thursday. Organiser of the event, Anne Gleonetz, herself a philosopher, explained to our French colleagues where the inspiration came from.
La Nuit de la Philosophie à Prague est un événement donc qui...
The Night of Philosophy in Prague is an event which stems from the tradition of the Knights of Philosophy, which began in Paris in 2010 from an initiative of the École Normale Supérieure and the French Institute. This special night in Prague follows in that tradition, and it is innovative in the sense that it groups five countries, the countries of the Visegrad Four and France, and is an initiative of the platform CEFRES linked to Charles University and the Academy of Sciences.
Du cadre académique et du lieu même qu'est l'université.
The Visegrad Four is composed of the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary. And she says the events and subjects have been selected to make it as accessible to the wider public as possible.
Cette idée festive, en fait, qui se passe justement durant la nuit.
This festive event takes place during the night from 7 in the evening till 3 in the morning. The idea is to offer the public everything from a range of mini-conferences to discussions. The conferences will be short and lively and the discussions will deal with current issues, but not just that. There will also be exhibitions, films and concerts which we hope will contribute to making the Night of Philosophy a festive occasion.
Qui vont rendre justement une atmosphère, nous l'espérons, festive.
All in all, 60 philosophers, many of them the top names in their particular subjects, and who are experienced in bringing philosophy out of the academic ivory towers and into the public arena or the streets, have been signed up for the Prague event. And just in case they or the public might get carried away, a general theme for the discussion has been selected. The theme is images, science and politics, with the main focus on the interface between science and politics in many current issues such as ecology, ecological security and bioethics, and the way these questions are being represented. Such topics, and Glionets suggests, could even be widened out to take a rather different view of ongoing questions, such as immigration, than they are treated in the mainstream media. She hopes that the Night of Philosophers can expand in future years with more participants and a wider offering of events, if this initial offer turns out to be a hit.
Chris Johnston with that report. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. The Dancing House Gallery in Prague has just opened an exhibition called Retro of the 70s and 80s, depicting the way of life of the common people and the communist elite in the last two decades of communism. The exhibition is extremely realistic, giving visitors a powerful throwback as they walk into the typical 70s living room, shop or holiday scene. Daniela Lazarová went along and was given a tour by one of the organizers, Nikola Lorincová.
Creating a retro exhibition of the communist years has one advantage. Given the drab uniformity of those days, the organisers only needed to put together a typical living room or bathroom to show visitors how the vast majority of people lived and the objects of daily use they were surrounded by. The exhibition takes visitors through the typical communist-style living room, kitchen and bathroom. Nikola Lorincová points out the main features of a small, oppressive-looking living room dominated by truly atrocious wallpaper.
The main feature in every 70s living room was the stěna, or living room wall, a set of connected open cupboards that stretched from one end of the living room to the other, and where people displayed everything they wanted to show off: glassware, porcelain sets, souvenirs, family photos, as well as a gramophone player or TV set. Here we see one of the first Czech-made TV sets, Tesla. There is a sofa and coffee table and the whole room is dominated by the wallpaper. There were just a few patterns back then, but unlike the classical brick and mortar homes where people used paint, flats were decorated with wallpaper and it was considered very in and part of the modern lifestyle.
Living rooms were the shop window of people's homes back then, and people spent the most money and effort on them. Kitchens received less attention, and again, kitchens in the communist-era housing estates, the so-called panelags, were paradoxically considered superior to those in regular houses, which were larger, warmer, and usually equipped with old stoves and wooden utensils. However, it was a Panela kitchen which people hankered for, ideally equipped with an electric stove, washing machine and loads of brightly coloured plastic utensils. Back then, old stuff was considered trash and people valued new furnishings even if they were all one and the same.
Tehdejší doba se vlastně vyznačuje nějakým průmyslovým sériovým vyráběním.
This was a time of uniform industrial production, not only in furnishings, but the simple electronics that were available and articles of daily use. People had little or no choice, and so everyone had the same things. Kitchen tables and chairs were almost identical, maybe only differing in color. The kitchen shelves and electronic stoves were similar models that people stood in line to buy, and the linoleum and wallpaper usually came with the flat. Even little things were identical, like fruit syrup, which was the common non-alcoholic drink, and the same brand of coffee, Standard, which you see over there.
Ze standardu, tamhle ho máme, přímo kávu standard zrnkovou.
In sharp contrast to the standard communist-era flat is a section devoted to the lifestyle of the communist elite, which had money to burn and spent plenty on what they called representation. On show are items from luxury communist hotels of the time, which served the top brass and foreign visitors. Nikola Lorencová again.
Zde máme například křeslo z již neexistujícího hotelu Praha.
Here we have a luxury table and armchair from Hotel Prague, which no longer exists, and an armchair for the former Federal Assembly, the Czechoslovak Parliament, designed by architect Karel Prager, as well as several lights designed by leading architects. The party set aside funds for representation and surrounded itself by special commissioned luxury articles made from the best leather, wood and imported materials. These were made to order by the best designers and craftsmen that the country had to offer.
Všech designérů, umělců a návrhářů, architektů, kteří působili v České republice.
On show are also the top export articles of the communist era, handmade crystal glass, which Czech glassmakers excelled in and which was highly valued around the world, Jablonec's jewellery, which had an excellent reputation, and not least Pilsner beer in 70s and 80s packaging. Other parts of the exhibition showed children's toys of the time, mostly wood-carved or plastic toys and board games, and a model classroom with cheap-looking desks and chairs, the obligatory school bag and school uniforms, complete with a red scarf worn by children who joined the communist youth organization Pionier, and a picture of then-communist president Gustav Husák hanging on the wall. There is also a shop sporting two salamis, some hard and soft cheese, and a line of identical-looking cans. The packaging is authentic, and although the goods on display present a sorry picture, many visitors old enough to remember them will feel a touch of nostalgia as they see the wrapper of a favourite chocolate bar or children's treat they remember from their childhood. Although advertising would appear to have been a waste of money in those days, advertisements for products which people had no choice but to buy did exist, and a reel of these advertisements is being shown at the exhibition. Another section is devoted to trekking and camping, a popular way of spending holidays when travel abroad was severely restricted. This section is represented by a tent, trekking gear, a huge plastic ball and badminton set, as well as a river paddle to document the popularity of canoeing. Probably the biggest challenge for the organisers was furnishing the so-called dissidents' room, because unlike the other uniform surroundings, dissidents wanted nothing to do with the socialist culture and went out of their way to be different and original. The dissidents' room is relatively bare, furnished only with an old bookcase, a mattress, a coat hanger with the coveted jeans jacket, books and a typewriter. The wall decor is posters and a US paper flag.
Je to taková vzorová ukázka bydlení tehdejších disidentů, kteří se
This is a model room of how dissidents lived, often sleeping over at friends' houses to avoid the communist secret police. Many of these rooms were hideouts and people who came to sleep over slept on mattresses. The furnishings are bare essentials with an accent on books and items smuggled or brought from the West, such as jeanswear and tapes of Western music.
The retro exhibition opened on June 15th and the organizers hope to attract a broad mix of visitors. Nikola Lorincová says everyone should find something of interest.
There is no doubt that the exhibition will be most interesting for older people and people who experienced this period and who will doubtless experience strong feelings of nostalgia over things that were once part of their life. On the other hand, young people should get something out of it as well, because it will give them some insight into how people lived, how things worked and the environment that surrounded us. Nikola Lorincová ending that edition of Panorama by Daniela Lazarová. And in the last part of our program, we travel outside Prague with Dominik Jun.
If you add the ending score to the names of a number of Czech towns and cities, then this is often the name for a larger area or micro-region also encompassing the surrounding countryside. One such example of this is Chebsko, the informal name for the region around the far western Bohemian city of Cheb. Cheb itself has suffered from a poor reputation for many years as a city blighted by poverty and a litany of social problems, so it comes as quite a surprise to venture out of the admittedly rather gloomy train station and into the city centre. The journey is laid out by a line of metal pavement signs, each featuring a date and charting the entire history of Cheb, in Czech, German and English, from the first written mention from the year 1061. The trail ends by the Brána času, or Gate of Time, a 9-meter-high metal monument built in 2010 by Czech sculptor Marian Karel. By this time you're in Cheb's main square. The place is in surprisingly top-notch condition for such a supposedly grim city, and everything looks beautifully restored with a fresh lick of paint and no dilapidation in sight anywhere. One of the main features in the square is Špalíček, a complex of 11 wobbly-looking houses which date back to the 13th century. The houses were built by merchants as a kind of old-fashioned shopping centre. One of the three blocks was demolished in 1809, but the other two sets were saved and first restored back in the 1960s. Further on are the remains of Cheb Castle, which was built in the 12th century for the Roman king Friedrich I Barbarossa. Today only a black tower and Romanesque and Gothic chapel remain relatively intact. The castle itself fell into disuse during the 18th century. Below the castle are the walls of the city's historic fortifications, also dating back to the 12th century. The original fortifications were upgraded in the Baroque style during the mid-17th century onwards. Today these structures form immense stone and brick walls separating the city centre from the Ohře River down below. Walking out of Cheb along this river, the waterway is transformed by the Skalka Dam into an immense reservoir. Built in the mid-1960s as both a reservoir and hydroelectric dam, the banks of the Skalka have undergone major renovation in recent years and feature countless tourist paths and other facilities. It's quite simply a delightful walk. A few kilometres away, one comes across the Bismarck Observation Tower. Tucked away about a kilometre from the border with Germany, the stone 18-metre-high tower was first opened to the public in 1909. It was built at the behest of the local Sudeten German inhabitants, just one of many monuments built in honour of Otto von Bismarck, founder of the German Empire. After the Second World War, the tower's proximity to West Germany meant that it was off-limits to the general public. In 2005, the tower, by now in a very poor state, was reconstructed and reopened to the public. The Bismarck Observation Tower offers a lovely view of the entire Chebsko area, including the nearby German city of Waldassen. During the spring, the countryside here is dominated by yellow fields of rapeseed plants. An area of the Czech-German border just south of Cheb features a revived historic Ovocná alley, or alley of fruit. One section features various apple trees, each containing a charming sign in Czech and German detailing the apples of the particular tree, their size, taste, and so on. Finally, just southwest of Cheb is Skansen Dobrava, a village dating back to the 12th century. This tourist attraction is comprised of a collection of folk-style wooden cottages built in the mid-18th century. The perfectly preserved cottages are characterized by colored wooden beams inset into the cottage walls. They are representative of a kind of fairy tale folk style of architecture which can be found across Central Europe. The main attraction here is Rustlerův statek, a former farm which today is open to the public as a private museum. The interiors evoke an idyllic cottage setting full of carefully handcrafted and beautifully decorated furniture, from beds to cupboards, from cots to chairs. Chebsko region offers countless fascinating corners to explore, and it's well worth visiting.
That edition of Travel Tip was brought to you by Dominik Yoon, and that brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Frankova. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.